This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight. This is a special pre-recorded program while VOA headquarters resolves some technical issues. I'm your host, Yehiesu Uhib, in Washington. Coming up...
I have confidence in the people of South Africa that they are going to abide by the restrictions that we have placed on their lives in order to save their lives.
That was South African President Cyril Ramaphosa on the need for tough measures to keep the coronavirus from spreading. Details coming up also. Botswana's president has declared an indefinite state of emergency effective Thursday. And in Senegal, the government says people are not taking hygiene and social distancing seriously. We'll have these stories and more in this special VOA Africa program. Our top story this hour... Botswana's president, Mokwetsi Basisi, has declared an indefinite state of emergency effective Thursday after the Southern African country recorded its first confirmed case of the coronavirus. Botswana had appeared to be keeping the virus at bay, but on Monday night, the country's health minister announced three people who had traveled abroad tested positive. Bokandisi Dube reports from the capital, Habrone.
President Mokwetsi Masisi moved to declare a state of emergency on Tuesday after Botswana recorded its first cases of the coronavirus. Masisi said the emergency would take effect at 12:01 a.m. Thursday and was needed because of the growing threat from the virus and the disease it causes, COVID-19.
The return of some of our citizens and residents from high-risk countries has also escalated the threat of the virus in our country. Therefore, after consultations with relevant stakeholders, it has become clear to me that it is necessary to declare a state of public emergency for the purposes of taking appropriate and stringent measures to address the risks posed by the COVID-19 pandemic.
Masisi said during the state of emergency, people will not be allowed outside of their homes except for essential services such as food and medicine. The president said authorities will also enforce social distancing for at least 28 days. Masisi said Botswana's National Assembly would reconvene from a recess to decide the duration of the state of emergency. Botswana had been one of the few countries in Africa without a recorded case of COVID-19. But on Monday evening, Health Minister Lemogang Kwape announced three people who had travelled abroad tested positive for the virus.
We have three Botswana who have tested positive for COVID-19 or corona. The three Botswana are two male and one female. They had travelled to the United Kingdom and Thailand. The three are kept in isolation at Sekitumile and other secure places. They are in good health.
Some Habrone residents like Owen Marumo welcomed the president's decision to declare a state of emergency. He spoke via a messaging application.
I feel this is long overdue, and I think they should have taken these drastic measures earlier before we had any cases confirmed. But then again, you'll forgive them because they don't have the benefit of experience. This is new and unprecedented. We hope it will be a case of better late than never.
Botswana, a week ago, closed its borders after neighbor South Africa recorded a jump in coronavirus cases and Zimbabwe saw its first death from the virus. Mkondisi Dube for VOA News, Habrone.
South Africa is in its second week of a 21-day nationwide lockdown to try to slow the spread of the COVID-19. Science has shown that the best way to do this is to limit contact between humans as much as possible. The government is allowing certain services it deems to be essential, such as food stores, to remain open, but large gatherings of people are banned and citizens have been urged to remain indoors. However, in some areas, security forces are struggling to enforce the regulations. Darren Taylor filed this report from Johannesburg.
I have confidence in the people of South Africa that they are going to abide by the restrictions that we have placed on their lives in order to save their lives.
President Cyril Ramaphosa addressed troops ahead of their deployment last Friday. He asked the police and soldiers to show restraint when enforcing the COVID-19 rules.
This is not a moment for skit and donner.
Skit and donner are the Afrikaans words for shoot and beat up. But over the weekend, the security forces were firing rubber bullets at groups of people roaming the streets of central Johannesburg. In some places, fist fights erupted as police pushed residents inside their homes. One of the flashpoints was Alexandra Township. This man says, "It's unfair of the government to expect us to be imprisoned in our shacks all day, every day. We haven't got nice homes like the rich people. I tried to leave my place to buy food and the soldiers would not let me through." The state locked the country down just before millions of South Africans got paid or received social grants. So crowds descended on grocery stores. A perfect way to spread the virus, says Community Safety Minister for Gauteng Province, Faith Mazibuko.
There's no compliance in relation to social distance, especially at the malls, and those that defy and want to open their taverns. We've got news for them. Is that the Gauteng provincial...
Indeed, for many across Johannesburg, it was fun and not food that was the priority. And they broke the law to party at bars and nightclubs. The police arrested several entertainment venue owners who refused to close their businesses.
Where is the owner? The owner must come with us. Did you hear?
At a media briefing, Provincial Police Commissioner General Elias Mawela said some people just didn't seem to understand the gravity of the situation.
We have put behind bars 148 people who decided not to obey the regulations, and we'll continue to stamp the authority of the state.
But some, like the people packing this club in the suburb of Westbury, did not appear afraid of that authority.
Funny lockdown begint, lekker soos dit hier lyk.
Partygoer Andrew October summarized the fatalism that the COVID-19 epidemic is inspiring among some South Africans. "Damn this lockdown," he said. "I'm going to get my kicks before I get that China virus." I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
A top official of the Nigeria Center for Disease Control, NCDC, says it has intensified communication activities on the COVID-19 pandemic to sensitize the people on the disease. The official says the method is working because people with suspected cases of infection have come in for testing. Dr. Chinewe Ochu is the head of programs and knowledge management at the NCDC. She spoke with reporter Mike Mbonye about efforts to enlighten Nigerians about the disease and the need to pursue testing and treatment. She says people with suspected cases of infection have been going to designated centers in the country.
We have intensified communication activities using all available communication channels to sensitize the masses on the need for supervised self-isolation for persons who may have been exposed to the virus. Now, this includes those with travel history not exceeding 14 days to any other country. Those who have had contact with confirmed cases or have visited a health facility that managed at least one COVID-19 case. They are advised to self-isolate and provide their contact to NCDC using our toll-free line or SMS line. If they develop symptoms while on self-isolation, they are to call NCDC, and we will then escalate to the state team who will get to the patient to collect samples from their homes. Those who test positive are transferred to the nearest treatment and isolation center. So enlightening these ones and making them to understand the risk it poses to their family members and to their friends and to the nation as a whole of them not self-isolating or reporting to NCDC. This is what we are doing to ensure that most Nigerians will adhere to this advisory. So far, I think this is having a lot of effect as the awareness is increasing and we're beginning to receive a lot of calls from such persons.
Do medical staff worry about getting overwhelmed? And what are they doing to avoid becoming the next Italy?
There has been a lot of political and social mobilization towards expansion of treatment centers and building of such capacity to ensure our healthcare workers are not overwhelmed. State governments are complementing federal government efforts by designating and equipping treatment centers in their states. Retired healthcare workers have been called back by the federal government to support the response. Federal government has also provided 10 billion naira to Lagos State, which is the worst hit state in the country, to support their response. And this includes health system strengthening activities. The Nigeria Center for Disease Control has also received 5 billion naira from the federal government to strengthen the national response with emphasis on diagnostic and treatment centers. Other governmental organizations such as the Nigeria National Petroleum Corporation, philanthropies, and even private institutions and so many others have all supported tremendously the health system strengthening efforts of the federal government. So all hands are actually on deck, and we are using a whole country, whole system approach in preparedness for the worst scenario.
What lessons are they learning by watching Europe and the US?
Nigeria had an extended window of preparedness opportunity by watching the evolving situation in civilized world such as Europe, Italy and the US. We leveraged the existing incident management system in place in the country for response to other infectious diseases such as Lassa fever. We understood the transmissibility of COVID-19 by just observing the mind-boggling increase in the number of cases and fatalities in these countries. We also searched the literature for scientific evidence continually. These evidence were generated from China and these other nations, and these we implemented in our own preparedness and response activities. But I must say that most relevant to us was our DGNCDC's visit to Wuhan, China, as a member of the WHO's task force. He understudied the amazing system in Wuhan for containing the spread of the virus, and this has been contextually applied to our response here in Nigeria. Furthermore, observing these other countries emphasized the gravity of this pandemic and necessitated the constitution of a presidential task force on COVID-19 to provide high-profile strategic leadership in containing the virus in Nigeria. So I must say that the lessons we have learned from observing these other countries have strengthened our own response here in Nigeria.
What does the center need? Are prices going up due to demand?
For the outbreak, we have categorized our response into two phases: containment and mitigation. At the containment phase, we are looking at a scenario where we have imported cases, epidemiologically linked cases, or community transmission that is localized to cities or local government areas with imported or epidemiologically linked cases. And for this phase, our objective is to stop transmission. And to do this, we want to have early detection of cases, early reporting, early case investigation, isolation and treatment, early contact tracing, and early social distancing, what we call the 5 E's. For early detection, we want to have more testing laboratories. We are expanding our laboratory networks to ensure that we have more labs that can test for COVID-19 across various states in Nigeria. We are also planning on having sample collection centers that are centralized and located in such places that people can have ease of access for sample collection. We want the Nigerian populace to also report cases early enough, that when people that meet case definitions begin to have these cases, that they will report early enough for us to identify them, investigate the cases, isolate and treat them early enough. We also want to start our contact tracing early so that we're able to identify those that have close contact with confirmed cases, isolate them and observe them so that they don't infect others. And then we want all Nigerians to practice this habit of social distancing. So what we're doing is to strengthen our efforts in social mobilization, in community mobilization, community sensitization through various media engagements, providing advisories to various categories of persons, and ensuring that everybody in any part of the country understands what COVID-19 is.
That was Dr. Chinewe Ochu, Head of Programs and Knowledge Management at the Nigeria Center for Disease Control. Despite numerous appeals from Senegal's government, many people in the West African country are not taking hygiene and social distancing recommendations seriously. The number of confirmed coronavirus cases surpassed 100 on Thursday, reaching 105. In a country where only half the population is illiterate, how can people get the message out? Anika Hammerschlag reports from Dakar.
In response to the growing coronavirus outbreak, Senegal's government has closed the country's airspace and shut down restaurants, schools, and even mosques. Monday, the president declared a state of emergency, imposing travel restrictions and an evening curfew of 8 p.m. But many people are not following recommendations to remain 2 meters apart and to wash hands regularly. In order to spread awareness about the importance of such measures, some people are getting creative. Alpha C is an art student and a member of Senegalese graffiti artist collective RBS, or Radical Bombshot. The group of about 30 artists has been creating murals around Dakar to illustrate proper hygiene practices and to encourage people to stay home and respect curfew. He says he's not panicking, but he's really scared for everyone because they don't realize what's going on. He says people think the virus is only prevalent in Europe and that it won't spread here. What will we do if we get to 10,000 cases, he asks. He says he doesn't think the hospitals can handle that. People aren't following orders to stay inside, he says. Considering Senegal's low literacy rate, C says art is an effective way to share an important message. He says they created the murals for everyone. They wanted people to understand the message, so they decided to focus more on the picture rather than the writing. That way, if people can't read the writing, at least they can read the image. The Graffiti Collective was formed in 2012 to respond to social issues in a manner that would be accessible to youth. Past projects have focused on violence against women and portraits of significant African leaders such as Nelson Mandela. The first of the COVID-19 murals was done in partnership with Dakar's Sheikh Anta Diop University on the school's campus. Abdoulaye Sow is a director at the university who commissioned the mural. He said the school is an ideal location for the mural because the area gets a lot of foot traffic. He says that people don't have time to stop for long, so a mural like this allows the message to have the greatest impact. The Graffiti Collective has completed 3 murals thus far. They hope to create about a dozen COVID-related works so that their message can be seen in every neighborhood in Dakar. Annika Hammerschlag for VOA News, Dakar.
You are listening to a special recorded program on VOA Africa. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Libya's justice ministry said Sunday that the Tripoli government has freed more than 466 prisoners. Libya has reported 8 cases of coronavirus, but thousands of African migrants are still held in overcrowded facilities where diseases spread rapidly. VOA Salem Salamon has the story.
While much of the world is under orders to practice social distancing to slow the spread of coronavirus, there are certain places where such distance is impossible. Overcrowded migrant detention centers, particularly those in Libya, are among the places most at risk for an outbreak. With dozens of people sharing a room and little access to running water, these makeshift centers can be a breeding ground for disease in normal times. A highly contagious airborne virus like coronavirus could spread at lightning speed, say experts.
Once coronavirus will spread in these detention centers, we are going to witness a massacre.
That was Julia Tranquina, a human rights lawyer based in London who represents asylum seekers. Tranquina said most of the camps in Libya are former animal stables or hangars where migrants must sleep on the floor or mattresses packed tightly together. She cited the example of the Dar al-Jabal detention camp in the mountains of Tripoli, where 22 migrants died in 1 year.
Because of the lack of food, water, sanitation, and lack of any medical care. So they all died of tuberculosis and starvation. So we can imagine what will happen once coronavirus will spread in these detention centers.
Figures about how many migrants are in Libya are difficult to come by. A study by the International Organization for Migration estimated there are between 700,000 and 1 million migrants in the country. The UN estimated there are about 3,000 refugees and migrants in detention centers. Tranquina said the official numbers do not tell the whole story. Many migrants are held in even worse conditions than those in official centers and are unaccounted for.
There are a lot of detention centers centers run by the militias and by the Haftar forces in the territories that they control. And then there are hundreds of lagers, the torture camps run by traffickers who are torturing people for ransom, raping them and enslaving them for many years. And we have no access to these people. No UN agency has access to these people.
Médecins Sans Frontières is one organization on the ground giving medical care to migrants, but they are unable to meet the overwhelming need. In May 2019, doctors visited the Dar el Jabal Detention Center and called the conditions catastrophic, saying the tuberculosis outbreak had been raging for months without treatment. Sacha Pitiou is the head of the mission in Libya.
We've been calling repeatedly and continuously for the closure of these detention centers and the end of arbitrary detention.
Pitiou said a lasting solution would require an opening of temporary shelters where migrants could be safe. He also said there must be agreements by safe third-party countries to resettle the migrants. To date, such agreements have been hard to get.
For the moment, these resettlement slots in European and Western countries are very limited. We're talking about 2,000 slots on average by year, while the general population of registered refugees and asylum seekers are over 46,000, which means that there's a huge lag, there's a bottleneck.
Salem Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
A nonprofit organization claims that Zimbabwe's legal system is rigged to benefit the rich while the poor suffer. Reporter Kuzai Zinawashi has the details.
Is the communications manager for Veritas, a nonprofit parliament watchdog that has been advocating against the death penalty. They say their findings have been shocking.
In 2017, Veritas did a study, and that study concluded that most of the murder cases where death sentences were imposed were coming from very poor people. The poor generally cannot afford the best of lawyers.
He says in most cases, those sentenced to execution relied on legal support provided by the state, wherein most lawyers lacked experience. Maponga says they have been running a campaign against the death penalty.
The campaign that we are having is called Time to Abolish the Death Penalty Now. Basically, why we are doing this campaign is that we feel it is not right to kill someone, whether they have committed a crime like killing.
He adds that Zimbabwe is a signatory to many international agreements that compel it to do away with the death penalty, and that there is political will to end it.
The president himself is one person who has come out openly declaring that he is against the death penalty. Remember, he speaks about the time when he almost faced the hangman's noose. Just to add, Zimbabwe has not done an execution for over the past 15 years. So basically, Zimbabwe has got a silent moratorium on the death penalty.
Maponga says the death penalty is a leftover of colonialism. Hence, people don't support it. Neither do traditional leaders. Maponga says it's a burden on public funds since death row inmates do not work for their food and international law demands that they should be in good health as they face execution. He says the bias in the legal system cuts across all cases. If a defendant cannot afford a good lawyer, then there is a good chance they won't get the same quality of treatment as their richer peers and may suffer prejudice. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashi from Harare.
And that wraps up this special VOA Africa program. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. And thank you again for tuning in to this recorded program while VOA resolves its technical issues. Thank you for choosing the Voice of America.
Hey, Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.